accession number 18773, Real One.
Gordon Preston, Real One. Where were you born, please?
London.
Which year was this?
1918.
Now, you were telling me earlier that you didn't grow up in London. Where did you grow up?
Here.
This is in Alcombe, Kent.
Yeah. Mm.
And did you go to school in Alcombe?
Yes.
How old were you when you left school?
I was 14.
Did you get a job?
Yes, had a job, yeah.
What job did you get?
I went into baking. You know, with the baker.
In the village?
Yes. Well, no, and then we've been through the village, often, up the top of the hill. But you've got to remember, all country boys were used to farm work. I mean, you grew up with it, you see.
And were you doing baking when war broke out?
No, only I was only there 2 years.
What job did you do after that?
Then I went to brickfields, clay digging, for bricks, making bricks.
And that's the job you were doing when war was declared?
I was in the army when war was declared.
Did you volunteer for the army?
Yes.
As a regular?
Yes.
When was that?
That was in 1919. I've got to think of the year.
'36. 1936.
36.
Why did you decide to go in for the army?
Well, work was scarce and money was poor.
Was it easy to get into the army?
If you were fit, yes. No trouble, yeah.
Where did you join up?
Dover.
What unit did you join?
Royal Field Artillery.
Where did you do the basic training?
Woolwich.
Can you describe what it was like?
It was pretty tough. All training is pretty tough. And it was tough, but it was good training. You know, you've come away from Woolwich, all fit young men.
In what way was it so tough?
Well, for one reason, you weren't used to being shouted at. That doesn't go down very well. And the other thing is the physical part of it, you know, the press-ups and all this. As soon as you'd done a thing wrong, it was 20 press-ups. And it was hard to take, you know, when you remember that you was 18 years old and had never been disciplined in your life, really. But you were certainly disciplined there, you know. And they were always tough men. They used to say to you, you know, you fancy a chance, come round the back of the building with me. And that was the instructor. Well, of course, they could scrap. So very few ever took them on. That's true, that is. Absolutely true.
Did you take them on?
No. I had more sense.
Could you cope with the basic training?
Yes. I found it very easy. Because I got quick promotion, you know, as a lad, I got made up to sergeant inside 3 years, which is very fast promotion.
And between 36 and war breaking out, was your service in England?
Yes, all in England, yeah.
What units were you serving with when war was declared?
The same one as I joined up, but no, I was telling you, of course it wasn't. I was serving with the 10th Field. The Stanfield Regiment, 54 Battery, because it was split into four batteries, you know. And I was in the 54th Battery.
What were they equipped with?
Field guns, 18-pounders then. But they converted when war broke out to 25-pounders.
What did you think of the 25-pounder?
Marvellous gun. Yeah, it really was, yeah. Give us a little bit of more range. That's what we were lacking in the 18-pounder range.
And can you tell me what you felt like when you heard the news that war had broken out again?
Well, it was a You knew he was in for a tough time. We knew that because the officers had been pressed upon us. And the Colonel Scriber was his name, called us all onto the square and gave us a lecture. And this is, I remember these words now. He said, now you're all professional men. You joined up, you said you could do this. Now's your chance to prove it. And that was as simple as that.
Did you go to France straight away?
No, not after war was declared. I would say it'd be 4 or 5 months, 4 months before we went to France. Then we went to sail from Southampton, you know.
What were you doing in the meantime before you went to France?
Still training.
On the 25 pounders?
Not then, didn't happen then, no.
No. The 18 pounds.
Yeah.
What was the journey like to France?
Well, it was. We sailed on the water. The water was rough. It probably is, you know. But by and large, it wasn't too bad. The only thing was the submarine hazard. You know, the German submarine, which were a hazard, you know.
But you got across all right.
Yeah.
What happened once you got to the other side?
We were billeted in Cherbourg for 3 days. And then we moved right up to the Belgian frontier. They'd all got it prepared, the villagers going in, you know, and the billets. And we that's where we went. We stayed there for 8 months, I suppose. This phony war, like, you know.
Which village were you in?
No, General, I can't remember the name. I can't remember the name.
Where was it near?
It wasn't far from Bapoom, up near that way.
How did you get on with the French civilians?
Well, there wasn't a good feeling between the French and the English, to be truthful, because they looked so not good soldiers. And that's a fact. I mean, I've got to say that. And at the same time, afterwards, I made some good friends with Frenchmen. But the average Poilu Frenchman then was a pretty poor-looking man, you know. He looked just poorly. Putty's not rolled right, and everything too big. His coats were too big. All that sort of thing, you know.
But what about the civilians in the village? How did you get on with them?
Oh, very good, yeah. Good, very good.
Did you fraternise with them?
Yes, we went to their house for beers of a night time, you know.
Was there ever any trouble created by the British soldiers?
No, less than was in England, really.
What were living conditions like there? What were your living conditions like near Bapoom?
Well, there were houses that were accommodated. The rooms were accommodated. You were sleeping 3 or 4 to a room, you know. They weren't bad, really.
And the weather?
About like this, very similar weather to this. Very, very similar.
Did you stay fit and healthy?
Yes.
What kind of work was the regiment doing at that time?
Well, we were making defences on the perimeter of Belgium and France, making gun emplacements very secure and strong, which we did do, because we spent several months making them. Sandbags were 3 or 4 thick. And could take a pounding. But the terrible part about it was, when Jerry started to break through Belgium, we advanced and we had to leave all that.
So was this work you were doing digging with a spade?
But a spade, yes. But sandbags and a spade, yes. Yeah.
Did it surprise you that you were so long before you were fighting the Germans?
Yes, yeah. Yeah, it did. Yeah.
What happened to you when the balloon went up?
Oh, dear. Yeah. We went into Belgium, and we took up a post. We laid down a barrage. Some canal in Belgium, I forget the name of the canal now, I honestly do. But we were there a week, and it was pretty heavy, bombard. So they did us too, you know. And but we was told that we would beat them back. And the surprise and the astonishment when we were told we were falling back, retreating. We couldn't believe it. Couldn't believe it. Honestly, we could not believe it. We said to the officers, "Well, we're winning." But it wasn't a case that we were holding our own on the front. We could have advanced, but you'd have been, you couldn't push on yourself like that. You see, because it was a good regiment I was in. You know, the 10th was a good regiment, got a good name, and it lived up to it. You know, the officers made sure about that.
What happened then when you had to retreat?
Well, we came back. And it was a case of hazard at foreign, you know, to make it awkward for sure. You know, there was no set targets. It was buzzing a few shells over to keep him thinking, busy, you know. And then, just think a minute, because we dropped back further, and we took on tanks with no AP. You know, you can't believe it, can you? Foreign AC at tanks, that's what we were doing. Trying to blow the tracks up, because it wouldn't penetrate the whole of the tank, the whole of it, but trying to just, so it spun round, you know, disturb the track. But then we had to go, I'm going to diverse a little bit there, but it's still to do with it. We was with the Green Howards and the Cameron Highlanders. So that was the two infantry divisions we were with. And an SOS went up. And they wanted help, because a tank had got into the town there and was creating havoc amongst the blokes, you see. And we drew lots to see if we were going in there. And you know, we got the shortest lot. I was the one that went down in there. And Officer Moulton, he shook hands with me. He said, "Well, good boy, Preston." He said, "You won't get back." And he was absolutely right, too. And all hell broke loose when you got down here, you know, no doubt about that. Then we left. We left off firing, we ran out of shells. But we had these different charges to put in. You know, if you wanted a shell to go a long way, you use all three of them. If you wanted a howitzer sort of thing, you cut them down so it was firing more in the air to get your distance, like a howitzer. And we accumulated a number of charges left, you know. And you're not going to hardly believe this, but I was angry with Horsfell, was the name, Lieutenant Horsfell. He come down from Cambridge, nice chap, but he didn't know soldiering. And I was going to destroy them. That was what lay down in my manual. All those things had to be destroyed, you see, because they were hazardous.
Destroy what?
These charges. And he said, "No, you can't do that," he says, "because we're very short." So he wouldn't let me destroy them. And we put them in the wagon. And we went down in this town, and the first thing that happened in there was we got machine gunned. Up went the charges. And every bloke in that truck was burnt. Always burnt bad. We were burnt, you know. Skin was hanging off you. Because gun cotton, it's like that. It's searing, you know. And we eventually drove to a field hospital. And we were taken into hospital.
By whom?
By the medical, you know, RMC. Yeah, that was where I was captured. I was captured in a church. There was about 40 of us laid out in a church. They'd taken the pews out. We was laying on the stretchers in this church, and that's where I was captured, in this church. Laying there, you know.
Let me just go over what you said so that I can understand it better.
Yeah.
You told me you got these orders to retreat in May 1940.
Mm-hmm.
Did they tell you where you were going to?
What, into France?
No, when you were retreating out of Belgium.
No.
Did they tell you where you were going to?
No, no. All we knew was it was to the port along the channel, you know, because Germans had broken through along there, you know, they had broken through too. But we didn't have any set thing to... said to us, like, you know.
And what were conditions like on the roads as you were retreating?
Chaotic, because you had refugees clogging the road right up, you know. And Jerry was strifing everybody.
Were you an organised unit, or did you break up into pieces?
Still organised, yeah.
And which troop were you in? You told me you were in the 10th Field Regiment.
Yes, that's right.
54 Battery.
Yes.
So which troop were you in? Because your son says it was D troop.
He's right too. Yeah, D troop. Yeah, he's right. Yeah. Yeah.
And were you able to get food and drink as you were on the road retreating?
Yeah, it was all hazardous. You got it when you could. There was nothing sort of firm about it. You know, it was a funny old job, like, you know, really.
Did any incidents happen as you were on the road making your way towards Dunkirk?
There was two or three of us. I thought myself, I'll get home. Although I was, you know, badly burnt and all that, but I met a wonderful surgeon out there. And he was a good surgeon. And that's how you're lucky, son. And he was a marvellous man. And he operated on me, and he'd done a good job, too. And I had to go back a week later. I laid in a barn sort of thing. There was about 50 of us in there. You know, it's something you never dream it would ever happen to you. You're just laying in there waiting to be die or see, or, you know, whatever. And
but let me go back a bit earlier than that. You said that you were with two lots of infantry, the Green Howards and the Camerons.
That's right, yeah.
When did you meet up with them?
Well, mainly when I got wounded. I knew they was in front of us, you know. And it was when we was coming out of this town, several of them tried to rush our truck and get in it. And you couldn't have it. You see, you wouldn't have gone. You'd have stayed. And we had to push them off. We had to push them off, our own blokes. But that's how we got out. It was every man for himself, really. Simple as that. It was pretty, pretty bloody tough, really.
How did you push them off?
With your hands.
Did they resist you?
No. But you couldn't, you wouldn't have got, nobody would have got away. And it made no difference because we was all caught. I mean, those who got away, we got away for a little way, and then we got caught. You know, you'd all caught, you know.
What were the infantry trying to do at that time?
a hold this town, but it was it was a forlorn hope because Jerry was in sole charge of it, you know, and he was dive bombing it as well, you know. You knew your number was up, you know.
What was the name of the town?
Yeah, of course, sorry.
This wasn't Merville, was it?
Hmm?
It wasn't a place called Merville, was it?
I just eludes me at the moment. I can't remember, you know, these. I should have just jotted down some of these things at the time, but I didn't, you know, you didn't, you know. But I can't really say truthfully.
Were the infantry panicking?
No, not really. I mean, it was disorderly. You know, it is when you get an army that's shelled, shot, and beat up. I mean, it's not orderly no more. It's disorderly, but they were still fighting.
Had the Green Howards and the Camerons taken many casualties?
Yes, they took a lot of casualties. So did we. Yeah,
from the shelling.
From shelling, and also from machine gun fire and all, you know, it was pretty rough whole day.
And then you said you had to draw these straws, and you drew the short straw when they were drawing lots.
Yeah, for the one guy that had to go down into the town to try and get the tank that was doing all the damage down there. And they couldn't fall no more. I mean, one guy there, because it was so tight, everything. And I drew the lot for it. And we went down in there, into that town.
How did they draw the lots?
By, most primitive, it's just the way you read it in books, by a straw. And if you drew the short one, you got it.
Who held the straws?
Captain Moulton, you know, our troop commander. Yeah, Captain Moulton was his name.
What was he like?
Good soldier, but he had no way of getting on with men, you know. I didn't get on with him very well, although I was a bombardier, but he said some silly things to you, you know, which was wrong. And I used to tell him so too, you know, in a proper way. He can't. But he was like that, but at the same time, he was a good soldier.
What type of silly things did he say?
Well, he said once to me, I had to get a... This is just what transpires sometimes. The gun got stuck in a wood, in the mud. And I was still saddened there at that time. And he said, you got to get that gun out, Sergeant Preston. He said, you know how to do it? And I said, of course I know how to do it. He said, tie the rope around that tree. Then I've got eight blokes under me in a troop, you see. And I turned around to the gun lad, another one. I said, just take down there and tie that rope. I mean, I delegated the order, you see. He turned around to me, he said, Preston, I bastard, he said, I didn't say him to do it, I said you to do it. But he'd used a word which I would never permit any man use in front of anybody. So this is absolutely God's truth, what I'm saying. So I put my rifle down, walked over into him, and I said, what did you just call me, sir? And he looked at me, and he was angry too. Because I said, I don't like being called that name. Captain Moulton, see. And I was going to, I mean, I was white with temper, and the adjutant came by. He'd see all something was a mock. He came over, he says, what's up, see? Well, you didn't tell him, you know. So it blew over like that. But we hadn't been in there an hour when Mr. Moulton found me, Captain Moulton, and said, I've come to apologise for what I called you. I said, he said, will you forgive and forget me? I said, I'll tell you what, sir. I said, I'll forgive you, but I'll never forget you. And then we finished on that. In actual fact, after that, we did get along a bit better, you know. But I wasn't going to have that. That was dreadful, you know. In front of your own team, too, you know. Because that's a word you was very careful about using. The Australians and the Canadians use it as a term of endearment to each other, you know. But we didn't. We regarded it as an insult, you know. Yeah. Captain Moulton, yeah.
So he was a good deal older than you were?
Oh, yeah. Well, he was older than me, yeah.
Were you surprised when he had the courage to apologise?
Yes, I was. I was surprised when he came over. I was digging a trench out at the time. I was surprised, yeah. I was surprised and gratified. But it was such a terrible thing to say to anybody. I said I'd forgive him for it in the heat of the moment and all that, you know. But just, I said, I won't forget it, yeah.
And when you drew the short straw,
yeah,
you said that he said to you, you won't get back?
Yes, more or less, he inferred it, you see. He said, I don't suppose I shall see you again, you know, which is the same thing, isn't it? And when you got down in the village, or little town, you could understand that, because it was desecrated by gunfire, by shelling. Now, the first shell we fired in that little village was to knock the war memorial down, because it was covering up all French war memorials, walls put in the centre of the village. And it you didn't have a clear line of fire. And the first shell, we went at the base of it, you covered up, because it was within danger of itself. You know, you had to get down, lay down the pool, down it, blew it to pieces. Then you had a clear view, which was a good thing. But it's sad they had to do it, but to the Frenchmen who lost their lives in the First World War. But it was, now Moulton saw that straight away, you know. No, he wasn't there, wasn't Moulton. Herzfeld, the bloke I did, he saw it straight away. Well, I'll give him full marks, say that it was a hazard.
So did you deliberately have to hit the war memorial?
Hmm?
Did you deliberately have to knock it down?
Yes. Yeah, no doubt about it. Yeah.
So when you drew the short straw and you had to go and deal with the tank, how many men did you take with you?
You took your ordinary troop. That was six. Gun crew, you know, for a field gun.
But you were in charge?
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do you remember the names of the others in the crew?
Well, there was one I remember. I remember Welshman. There was three, four Welshmen. Jones. And, you know, there was three, there were three Welshmen. And they had this lad, big fella, come from Brighton and Hove. Evans, Danny Evans was his name. Fine fella, but, oh, Christ, didn't he have a wound on him. But where this machine gun went through the side of the motor, flattened it out of it, and went through here with him.
Through his thigh?
Through his hip bone, just by there. He was in a tremendous hell of a mess. I tried to put a dressing on it, but it wouldn't. It was too big, the wound was.
Was this after you'd gone into the town?
This is,
Or before you went into the
town? Just afterwards. We was coming out, trying to get out of it, and then, yeah.
Were there many Welshmen in your unit?
Three, wasn't there. But the sad thing, there's three of them in there, and they were good soldiers, you know. But the sad thing about it was, they finished up on a sour note, because when we were going further back to get back into our motor again, because we had jumped out of it, you see, they wouldn't come. Their nerve gave out and they wouldn't come. They stayed where they were, laying on the ground.
Who wouldn't come?
These three Welsh lads.